News Talk Breakfast.
In association with AIR. Do anything, anywhere with high-speed 4G mobile data coverage across 96% of the population.
This is News Talk.
Now, the government has taken his foot off the pedal, apparently, when it comes to reforms to help bring down the cost of insurance. That's according to Insurance Ireland, who this afternoon are before an Oireachtas committee on the issue. And we're joined in studio by Kevin Thompson, who's CEO of Insurance Ireland. Kevin, you're welcome back.
Good morning.
First of all, why do you think the government has forgotten about this issue? Now, we've talked about it many times before, and you've been out there front and centre.
I suppose, firstly, we've got to give the government some credit in terms of the two reports which it published. Firstly, the Cost of Insurance Working Group report, which they published in January of last year, addressing motor insurance. And we subsequently had another report which addressed the cost of employers' liability and public liability. But unfortunately, as there has been some recommendations implemented, but equally the two most important recommendations which we would see, which would move the dial in terms of reducing the cost of insurance, is in relation to increasing the powers of the Injuries Board and ultimately getting the benchmarking process complete, benchmarking our awards against other international awards, which is currently with the Personal Injuries Commission. When you look at the Injuries Board, we had a consultation going back as far as 2014. We're 4 years down the line and we haven't seen any legislation which would enhance the power. So our fear is that with other competing priorities within government at the moment is that it probably hasn't got the focus it should have.
Where are we in terms of the cost of insurance at the moment?
Well, we've had a 12% reduction in the last 12 months. But as you know yourself, motorists, particularly in motor insurance, have seen a 70% increase from where it was at the lows. Now, what we're facing at the moment is, and each report has borne it out, is that we've had an increase in the cost of claims that's been borne out by the Cost of Insurance Working Group on motor and on the ELMPL. Mm. And until we address the cost of claims, unfortunately, we can't address the cost of insurance.
OK, I was reading something this morning, and there's been quite a lot of stuff you may have noticed in the papers in recent weeks. It seems that these cases come, a whole bunch of them come together, where judges are throwing out ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous cases. Now, I want to ask you this. I was just reading a piece, Raymond Grove, Mr. Justice Raymond Gore covers quite a few of these cases, and he said last year, he said someone would want to be blind not to see a series of damage claims brought before his court worth €240,000 that they had been, that you'd want to be blind to see that they weren't orchestrated or they were orchestrated. He said he threw out all the claims he heard over 3 days over a period of a month. And he says these accidents were planned and all four plaintiffs are willing participants in them and the party to a fraud. What I'm coming to is this. Number one, should there not be legislation to prevent lawyers from knowingly bringing cases like that before the courts, because surely they would see that these cases were fraudulent? And number two, nothing seems to be done about these people making these fraudulent claims.
I suppose on the first point, we would look towards organisations such as the Law Society to make sure that there is a system in place there, that there is a vetting before these cases actually get to court. I think you're right on the second point in that it has been highlighted before that it's a bit like going into a casino and spinning the wheel. If you fail on the first attempt, you go on the second attempt. And unfortunately for us as an insurance industry, but I must commend our sector, we really have upped their game in terms of fighting these fraudulent cases. But ultimately, you've seen in recent newspaper reports whereby if it's turned down to circuit court and it goes to higher court, the chances of an insurer recovering its cost, even if when it gets to the higher court that again the original verdict is upheld, is minimal. So something probably needs to be done.
Should
in
it
this
not
year.
Be a criminal offence? There was one case last week where somebody, it was clearly, and a judge again spotted it and said, look, this is a ridiculous case. It was an allegation that somebody, a truck had collided with a car and a group of people pursued the guy and all of them claimed for injuries, even though there was no damage done. Like, surely there should be a criminal offence in that. Well, a perjury is one that I can think of straight away. But surely there should be, if you do push a case like that, then one of the consequences of doing so would be a criminal charge at the end of it.
Well, our view on this is that it's very clear. This is not a victimless crime. When people take these cases, it does drive up the cost of insurance. And equally, if people perjure themselves on the stand in front of a judge, there should be consequences for that action. But I suppose we have to bring a bit of balance to this as well, in that the majority of our claimants who do make claims are genuine claimants. But unfortunately, with the element of fraud that we have, it does distort that. And what we need to make sure is, firstly, that we have proper deterrence to fight fraud. But equally, we need to make sure that the cost of our claims and the level of awards needs to be benchmarked into against other jurisdictions. And I'll give you one example. If you look at the cost of an ankle break here in this jurisdiction, it'll get you 54,000 versus in the UK, it'll get you 12,500. So we need to address this issue.
OK, well, I think we'll be talking to you again about this. Kevin Thompson, CEO of Insurance Ireland. Wish you luck today with the committee and remind them that it's the people of Ireland who vote for them or it's the people suffering the most with this.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for coming in.
Sure.
OK, 16 minutes past seven on News Talk Brexit, Paul Williams and Shane Coleman. Now, Ireland and Britain could experience extreme seasonality in the form of a move to colder winters and much warmer summers in the coming years. That's according to research from NUI Galway and the University of Maine. Now, Dr. Gordon Bromley from the Geography Department at NUIG is one of the authors of the research. I caught up with him and I began by asking him to explain in layman's terms what they found in their research.
Certainly. We found, looking back in time, to the last period when the climate in this part of the world was undergoing some really abrupt changes, and by abrupt I mean maybe as fast as in a handful of years or so. Looking back at what that looked like on the ground, we were surprised to find that even though the scientific community has said, oh, this was a very cold time, and we could be heading there in the future with global warming, our research showed that it was also a very warm time. And so that sounds paradoxical, but what we're thinking is the winters were very, very cold, but the summers were actually very, very warm. And we're not talking Saharan here, but we're talking warm enough that this is a very seasonal, sort of continental kind of environment. It's the sort of thing we don't have today.
How is that relevant to global warming today?
Well, that is the most pertinent question. I don't know if you're aware of this, but there is a concern. Let's put it that way. We don't want to be scaremongering here, but there is a concern among scientists that the warm currents, like the Gulf Stream, that bring warm water towards Europe and that is transferred to the atmosphere, that those currents today are very sensitive to relatively small changes in temperature and salinity of the water. And so what that means is that what we see as a nice Gulf Stream bringing warm water to Galway, to Ireland, you can grow palm trees here, for example, that current and that ocean heat supply is not necessarily as robust as we think, and it could weaken or it could even shut down if continued melting of the Greenland ice sheet continues to sort of dilute the North Atlantic Ocean. And so that is a genuine concern. How fast that would happen, exactly when, I'm not in a position to say, but the fact that it is weakening now, we think, makes us wonder about just how much heat that current will be able to provide in the future. And so, to get back to your question of how relevant is this today, the government and the EU, they are looking at potential impacts of abrupt climate change and what we can do to mitigate those impacts or adapt to the events, and one of them is perturbations, if you like, in the North Atlantic Ocean. And we have this idea of a weakening of the Gulf Stream making Europe very, very cold, places like Ireland very cold. But our research is providing, I think, a more nuanced view of that. And I would say it would actually make the climate more continental. So yes, cold in winter, but actually warm in summer. And we need to plan for that if we're going to have effective adaptation and mitigation strategies, if the government is going to produce these and society is going to prepare for these potential events, then we need to know what form they're likely to have.
Could this potentially happen in our lifetime?
Yes. Oh, yes. I think so. And again, I'm not trying to scaremonger at all, because I'm not saying that they will. But the one thing we do know about climate is that it doesn't change gradually. It has thresholds, it has tipping points. And if the geologic record is anything to go by, climate change can happen overnight.
Okay, this will inevitably be seized upon by people listening this morning saying, well, okay, this happened 12,000 or 13,000 years ago, so all this stuff about man-made climate change is nonsense. And they'll probably also say, even if it's true what you're saying, we'll just get a shift in the climate. Colder winters, warmer summers, it can't be that bad. What would you say in response to those points?
Well, in response to the latter, that it can't be that bad. Well, maybe it can't, but our society, our economy, where we get our food from, if we think about those things, it's built entirely around the climate. The climate dictates what we do, where we do it. And our climate is very mild. It's never very cold in winter, and it's never very hot in summer, and it's pretty much always raining. Climate can change very rapidly, as we've seen, and that could thrust our society into a very different way of operating, and I don't think we're ready for that, you know, in terms of what we can farm, where we can grow it. Can you get all your food from Europe via boats if the Irish Sea is frozen? Discuss. So I think, there's a lot of reason to be thinking about these questions because they do matter. As to the fact that the climate changes on its own accord or naturally, it certainly does. And we're trying to understand how it varies naturally in order to understand what we're doing to it and how that might change it or exacerbate those changes. You can't stop the climate changing, for sure, but we are dumping 35 billion tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere every year, and that is changing the chemistry of the atmosphere. We know CO2 is a greenhouse gas, and I just think it's a really bad experiment to be running with no end goal. So it's scary stuff, I think.
So no solace for climate change skeptics in terms of your research?
Oh, no. No. But we are just trying to report what we find. Stress again, as with all scientists, we are not out to scaremonger, but we are out to inform. And the more knowledge you have, the better prepared you are.
Okay, that was Dr. Gordon Bromley from the Geography Department at NUIG and one of the authors of that really interesting research on extreme seasonality, talking to me a little earlier.